I don't like this business of preaching to fans.
Calm down, Greg. It's soccer. It's soccer.
You know anything else about soccer?
Not much. All I know is I got a lot of balls.
You know, it doesn't matter if you're in the stadium watching the game on TV. It's just the guy's not good enough. The guy is just not good enough.
Simon, I don't know if you're big into New Year's resolutions, but, you know, wondering if maybe you pledge to come out of your shell a little bit in 2015.
Kind of pisses me off, to be honest.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC Channel 94 and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, David Goss, Simon Borg, out in the wilds of South America somewhere. Hopefully talking to the locals. He would probably be mad if I gave you the exact country where he's laying his head, because he said he wasn't going to talk to anyone. He was going to pretty much lock himself in a room.
He's sitting on a beach right now with a tiki cup and just talking to himself about Poku.
Yeah, I probably.
That's the reality of the world.
If you hadn't seen Kwadwo Poku, made Dave and I both look like idiots. Or did he? Because if I remember correctly, actually, Dave, you were the one. You were the OG Poku fan club president.
I mean, I didn't want to say anything, and obviously I've not been allowed to say anything because Simon likes to put me on the other side of
you.
All of his arguments.
Just browbeat you.
But, yeah, I thought he was going to be a good player. I didn't think he was going to do that.
Yeah, or, you know.
And I don't think
that may be an outlier. Look, he scored a goal and had an assist in a 3-1 NYCFC victory. We'll talk about that here in just a little bit. I'd be remiss if I didn't give you a bit of a rundown. We have two great guests on today's show. Sebastian Leggett? I don't know. We'll figure out how to pronounce his last name when he comes on of the LA Galaxy. He scored his first ever MLS goal, the former West Ham player, U.S. Youth International. Interesting backstory on him. We'll get that out of him. And then Jeff Crandall. He works for U.S. Soccer. You may remember him from his days with the Chicago Fire. He is leading up their U.S. Open Cup push. And this
unprecedented
coverage. Unprecedented,
so
really
it's
it is.
Great.
You can watch just about every single game. This is the week that that MLS teams come in, and there are some juicy matchups. Cosmos, New York City FC, that's a good one. L.A., PSA Elite.
Colorado
we'll see.
Derby.
I think PSA Elite's the last amateur team. Yeah.
Colorado Derby, Houston, mm-hmm. Aztecs. There's a lot of really fun
Charleston,
matchups.
Orlando. You remember that little bit of Charleston brouhaha earlier in the season? So we'll see or in the preseason, I should say. We'll also talk about plenty of international action. The U-20s crash out of the World Cup against Serbia.
Crash.
Yeah, they didn't crash out. They just lost a PK shootout. It was a great performance from Zach Steffen, though, so we can go back to that. Some bad PKs from the U.S., though. U.S. women, they didn't win. They didn't lose, but they drew. They didn't score a goal. Neither did Sweden. 0-0 in their second group stage match. We'll talk about that one. Including,
neither did Canada.
Yeah, that's tough for Canada. It's really tough for Canada. Abby Wambach had some interesting comments. She may or may not be blaming the turf for her misheaders, but we'll find out about that later. MLSers are in Copa America. We'll touch that very quickly. And Canada has their second against Dominica, these World Cup qualifiers. They won the first one 2-0 by a pair of goals from MLSers. Let's jump right into the weekend, though, Dave. NYCFC 3, Montreal 1. Montreal going for their second straight away win. It would have been history for them. Instead, NYCFC now have their second win in a row.
Which is history for them.
Which is history for them. Their first ever winning streak. Yeah, but they've only got three wins.
Can you
wins,
call
so.
Two games a winning streak?
They are. They are.
Okay.
How could you not? Did you see video afterwards of just mobs of NYCFC fans
underneath the
six train chanting, "We want Red Bull"?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They after every game, they do a celebration
out there.
So I can imagine after a win, which I've never seen them do a celebration after, that it's that much more. It's the perfect time for them to have this run because we knew they were going to get a shot in the arm in July. And it sounds like they might be getting some additional defensive replacements as well. You knew you were going to get the shot in the arm from Lampard. If they can go on a decent run and feel good about themselves going into that, so it's not like they're putting their entire hopes on him when he steps in, they have the opportunity to go on a run. And we know MLS, if you get hot in the summer, you can put yourself in the playoffs.
Yeah, you definitely can. Jason Kreis had this to say after this one. I felt that this giant-sized gorilla had been lifted off everyone's shoulder. He said for the first time that they were able to play in a positive and correct way. They were, quote, a little more liberated, more free to be the type of players and the type of team that they're capable of being. You mentioned those changes, though. Here are the rumors. These are still just reports at this point. Both of them coming out of Europe. One of them would be Andoni Iriola, which is a right back, right midfielder from Athletic Bilbao Very, very good player. Over 500 appearances, I believe, for that club. So that would be a big get for them. Just 32 years old, so still has a good bit left in the tank. Some veteran presence out there. RJ Allen, I know you'd be heartbroken
hey,
to see
listen,
him go to the
he
fence.
Can play right mid as well, so RJ Allen can still hold down right back.
Poku, RJ Allen, yeah. I think they're good to go. That's an MLS Cup contending squad as it is. And then there's a Manchester City youth standout that may be coming at left back. Angelino, he's got some sweet highlights on YouTube, but we'll see what actually happens with those. Stay tuned. But you had something to say about this one.
I thought it was interesting. One of David Villa's comments was, I thought we played well in that we pressed high and pushed the other team.
David Villa scoring a goal in this game, as did Nick Stiskrud.
And if it's a small, tight field and you play on it all the time and another team comes in and has to settle, maybe they should be playing a little bit more of a high press style because there's just less room for that back line to move it from side to side. Try and force turnovers. It won't be as pretty as maybe what Jason Christ likes to play.
Right.
But at some point, if you're having trouble at home, you got to adjust to the fact that you have this. It may not be an advantage, but you have something that's unique about your home field. You have to make it an advantage.
And there was some talk about that with long throws and how other teams might deal with that as well. You saw Sporting Kansas City really take advantage of that. When I think, and I hate to bring this back to Poku. I told you I was going to watch him the whole game, and I did. Look, he played very well in this one. He still has some uncharacteristic. I take that back. He still has some mistakes. He still has some sloppy times with the ball. He gets away with some of it because he can make up for it physically. But I think that's the key to them pressing high. I think they have to. You have to have somebody back there to clean up the messes because at some point, teams are going to find their way through.
And he also does this.
Mattia, left edge of the area, squares it back across. Poku, Cuadro Poku cements it for New York City FC.
And the crowd goes wild.
Do you think Simon inadvertently got goosebumps and didn't know why?
He wasn't watching. Yeah, he didn't have any updates on.
Am I cold or did Poku score? Yeah. I bet Poku scored.
I could see that happening.
Hey, look, there was another win for an Orlando expansion side. Two expansion wins this week. And that might be the first time that's happened this year. I didn't go back and look. I probably should have. 1-0 against DC United. DC still at the top of the East. They weren't too happy about this one. A Kaká penalty got this done. The original was saved and then he bundled it back over with his head. But the reason they were unhappy was because they thought the PK was soft. Ben Olsen said, hey, this was no. It's Taylor Kemp, Pedro Ribeiro in the right side.
Yeah, but you're our resident Simon Borg this week.
I am.
You are instant replay.
I am instant replay this week.
So was it a penalty kick?
It was a penalty. You may be able to tell both Dave and I are losing our voices. Dave, because he partied the weekend away in Montreal.
No, it's just coming back still from last week.
Okay. Me, because I screamed into a microphone for the better part of 5 minutes. I don't know how Simon did it. For me, this is a PK. Look, you leave your feet, Taylor Kemp. This is not shoulder to shoulder. You don't have possession of the ball. You come in and barrel him over. You can only blame yourself in that situation. There was a PK at the end of the first half that DC wanted.
Yeah.
Perry Kitchen gets pulled down in the box, but the ball wasn't yet in play and therefore is not live and therefore there cannot be a foul called and no penalty. So that's what that one's about. You can check that out in instant replay. We did not mention, however, the Dom Dwyer saga. And I don't know how we didn't mention this because it was so entertaining. If you weren't paying attention, back and forth Sporting KC and Orlando win. It all started when Adrian Heath went on a radio show and said this: "There's no secret that Dom wants to be here, here being Orlando. We have tried to bring him here. We have done everything we can. Unfortunately, we can't do it yet, but we will keep trying." Peter Vermees answered back. He said, "I think this is unprofessional. I haven't heard from Heath yet, but I expect I might." Heath came out later in the week and apologized, said, "Hey, my bad. This is not what I intended." Then MLS fined him for tampering, violating their tampering policies, which I think is the right call. But an interesting thing to keep your eye on. There's been some rumors that maybe Sydney LaRue, you may remember the two of them, sat in our studios here very, very recently. There's some rumors that Orlando wants to start an NWSL team, and then that would be a package deal. So keep your eyes on that one. Moving on, as the weekend goes on, we will get to Sebastian Leggett and Crew LA in just a second. They were delayed for weather this weekend, so we'll delay them and keep running through. Revs 2, Fire nothing. Diego Fagundes, 2 goals this season, both of them absolute crackers. I mean, this was ridiculous, right?
Is this the best goal of the year?
Oh, that's tough. We might as well describe it. A ball coming down off a corner kick, right?
It's easy to describe because everyone has dreamt of it.
Right.
And everyone, every time, it's a corner kick, it's cleared out, he's on the top of the box, he hits it clean out of the air on the
volley
on a
rope. Everybody wants to be Paul Scholes in that situation.
So everyone knows what that goal is. It never happens.
And it wasn't just a volley. It was almost like a complete side volley. He rotates his body and comes through it at a crazy angle. Really impressive stuff from Diego Fagundes. But the thing with New England is they got so many bodies for those outside spots. Diego had a great season 2 years ago. Wasn't really didn't live up to those expectations last year, but you know he still has it in him.
Kellen Rose still hasn't started consistently this year. You have Teal Bunbury, who's having a very good year quietly compared to what Charlie Davies is doing.
Juan Agudelo plays out there. I mean,
they have the one issue is though the places that they don't have depth is where they're in trouble. And Jermaine Jones now it looks like will be out for a while, and that's a hit.
That's a huge hit. 6 to 8 weeks for Jermaine Jones, a bilateral sports hernia. They did surgery last week. You might remember February 10th of this year, he also had a similar surgery, a hernia surgery. So that's troubling for them. And you mentioned it, they could be in some trouble. You move him out of there, all of a sudden here comes Andy Dorman. Maybe then you don't have the guys on the back line that you want. You're shuffling a little bit there because, of course, he's played at center back.
But he shouldn't have played at center back.
I know.
So.
I agree with you. But how much does this actually affect him? Because they get the win without him, but that was their first 1-6.
I think that if they can have him healthy going into the playoffs, they'll be okay in the regular season because they are so talented across the board. Now that they have a guy in Agudelo who can carry them at times when Davies isn't, but they have a lot of guys that can carry them if they're on form.
On any given day. But it doesn't seem like there's the consistent one, and Lee Wynn hasn't been the consistent
one. Lee Wynn hasn't been, but I think he's looked better in the last two games than he has all season. So I think he's starting to come around, and I really like Caldwell. I think he does a good job there. The question with Jermaine Jones is, we know that he plays 100%. Mm-hmm. So as he gets older, can he find a way to manage himself through a long season?
Can his 85% be more than good enough and set him out for maybe the postseason at 100?
Yeah, because there are guys who play a certain style, and then when they get older, they can't play that style, and they continue to try to, and they just get hurt.
Can he adapt? We'll see. You know, he did say a while back that Scotty Caldwell should be getting looks for the U.S. national team and would be in a while. Scotty's starting to show that. He's really starting to show a little more bite than he had before. The best team in MLS, though, remains the Seattle Sounders. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They host Dallas this weekend, scuffling Dallas, hashtag sad FCD fan Dallas, 3-0 win for the Sounders, and this one all comes down to a pair of substitutions by Siggy Schmidt. No surprise there. He brings on two of his best players. They go on to win.
But in a different position. Yeah. Brad Evans coming in at midfield. Zach Scott struggled a little bit with Fabian Castillo's pace, but they kept the clean
A lot
sheet.
Of people struggle.
A lot of people
Zach Scott, that's like a nightmare situation for Zach Scott.
But doesn't the question, they made their run last year with Zach Scott at center back.
Yeah, they did.
So should they be playing Brad Evans in midfield?
Yeah, I mean, that's tough to say. I think that they've been at their best this year with him at center back. But in this situation, it was unique for him. You're coming off international break. You're coming back from Europe for his part. He played a good bit in those two big wins for the national team. So I understand why they did it in this lineup. It made the most sense. But it's all about Obafemi, right?
Yeah.
He changes the game. He's the best pure striker in MLS. There's no doubt about it. And I think the reason why Seattle will overtake LA and break their kind of stranglehold on MLS Cup this year is Obafemi. Last year, Keane was probably the best player, at least the most productive player in MLS. He had LD feeding him a lot. That helped as productive Jossie's artist. But this year, I don't think there's any doubt. It's Obafemi Martins. Keane has a long way to go to get healthy.
I think so, too. But I just don't think we know the LA team that we're going to see in the playoffs yet with guys like Legette coming in and guys like Zardes and Villarreal slowly building into their positions. But you know that I think Obafemi Martins, I thought he was the best player on the continent last year. So I'm never going to knock that.
There you go, best player on the continent. Let's get to the Galaxy. They drew 1-1 this weekend in Columbus. There was a 2-hour and 5-minute weather delay. If you were paying attention, these guys were messing around in the locker room. They were playing some games. They were doing their thing. And then they went out and played a game. Higuain with the equalizer for the Crew. Neither get all 3 points. That's probably the way it should have ended up. But Sebastian Legette, he gets the first goal, and he's on the phone now. Sebastian, what's up, man?
Hey, how's it going? Everything's good. Thank you.
Yeah, it's good on this end, too. I had a little bit of a nervous moment there saying your name because I swear I've seen it said a different way by different people 5 or 6 times. I finally I went down to, like, the bottoms of the internet, and I found a clip from West Ham of you saying your name, and I think I got it right. What's the pronunciation guide here?
The thing is funny because the way my parents grew up saying it, it's Legette, but the way I've always said it growing up was just Legette, and it's just like it just rolled off the tongue better, and it's just easier for everyone. So
it's legit, but with an ET at the end.
Is it Legette?
With an ET at the end. So it's just like, I know it's a little weird one, but I don't blame people for getting it wrong, but you know.
What's the number of legit puns you get on a daily basis from people? I'm resisting so much right now.
It's high up there, but it's great. You know, I mean, anything that gets you know, get fans smiling or anything like that. You know, it's all fine with me.
So a big performance for you this weekend. Obviously, you're in Columbus. You're not going to start. At least that's what Bruce Arena said. And then they jump into a 2.5-hour rain delay. Walk me through this year. Yeah, what happened? How did you get on the field?
Things happen in sports, you know, things like that. You know, unfortunately, the weather was a big delay, and it was just a little crazy how it happened. But, you know, that's what happens. That's what happens sometimes. You know, you just, like, you know, we were warmed up, everybody's ready, and then, you know, you get like a big, like, yeah, 2-hour delay, I think it was. And, you know, Edson was available to start. You know, giving us, you know, that experience up top. But, you know, we cooled down, and then he, you know, somehow he just started feeling it, so he wasn't ready to play. So so I jumped in, you know, literally 2 minutes before kickoff, I think I found out. So I didn't really have time I was prepared either way. So and I'm just glad it went well.
And during the rain delay, what are you doing? Are people talking? People hanging out, playing cards? Are cell phones allowed out?
A little bit of everything, to be honest. I didn't really know what to expect. I was like, oh my god, you know, I mean, we're just gonna keep stretching, but honestly, we just kind of try to keep a relaxed, you know, state of mind. You know, just keep focused on the game, but just stay in a relaxed state of mind. You know, don't get caught up in the big mess. You know. But, no, I mean, we just play, you know, two-touch or, like, you know, juggling or doing tricks. Or, you know, just keep on the move, you know, but the best we could.
Yeah, I saw you guys playing a little bit of soccer foursquare. I haven't seen that before. And Omar Gonzalez is sending out Instagram pictures saying, hey, man, when's this delay going to end?
I actually didn't see that one, but I know it was we were a little worried. I mean, we're just like, you know, I mean, if we're going to play the next day, I think that was the plan. That's what we were leaning towards. I think we were, it reached a certain point where we were just like preparing to leave. And then Bruce just came in and, you know, the game is on. So we just have to, you know, strap our boots and get warmed up quick.
Have you ever seen when in college baseball, when they have rain delays, they start to get a little bit creative?
Oh, you know what? I've heard of this. I've actually never seen it. But no, I've definitely heard it. I might have to check it out.
Yeah, Bruce Arena, I don't think is going to allow that one. No choreography from him.
I'm sure they do some crazy stuff.
But you get in the game and you score, and I'm reading your comments afterwards, and it almost sounds like you went into a fugue state. You had no idea how you did this thing, how the ball even got
honestly,
you.
Honestly, yeah, it was an interesting one. Until I saw the replay, I was like, I really did forget how the ball got there. I just remember turning and, like, you know, looking. I didn't have time to look up the goal. I just knew where it was. I guess it was just something off instinct, you know. Those things, you know, those times, those type of plays, you just can't, you can't really plan it. It just has to happen, you know. So I'm just glad it went in, you know, and I'm glad I, you know, put the team up front, you know, early on in the game, and it just set the tone. You know, unfortunately, we couldn't get the win, but, you know, that's what happens away. And, I mean, yeah, we're just glad that we got the point.
Obviously, Bruce was happy with his result. He said, hey, look, 2-hour delay, we'll take what we can get on the road,
right.
But for you, I think this was maybe the first opportunity for us to see you in a you know, a lengthy appearance where we really get a good look at you and where you fit into the team. I'm interested on your side. How do you see that? Where's your best position with this club right now? What kind of role are they looking at you for? And what do you want to be ultimately going forward?
Well, you know, it's the thing about our system, you know, and fortunately, I can. You know, I can play in various positions, which will help, you know, if there's injured or whatever we need at that specific game or time. So, but I think where I play, you know, maybe behind the striker, or, I mean, if I do play out wide, I mean, I can give, you know, I want to penetrate, you know, I want to get in the box, I want to get goals, I want to get assists. And, you know, the more I play and the more my fitness gets up, I think I can provide that for the team. And, you know, let's just hope that and I keep getting more minutes and my fitness stays good, and we'll see.
Now, let's take it back just a little bit, because I think most people out there remember you from the USU youth teams and West Ham, obviously,
yeah.
and that ended, and you're over here back in California, a little bit farther south from where you grew up in the Bay Area. We'll talk a little about LeBron and some of the things going down for you guys up there right now, but take me back to the beginning, let's say, and let's walk a little bit through your background and how you ended up in L.A. What was the turning point for you?
Long story short, you know, I mean, I went to West Ham, I think, when I was 13, my first trial, and then I think fast forward 3 years, I finally signed professionally at 16, and then literally just find my way. And then I was in, you know, training first in 17, 18, and you know, Sam Allardyce came. You know, I think Joe Franco Zola was the manager at the time when I was really breaking into the first team at 17. And then, you know, like it happens in soccer, you know, managers get fired, and you know, those things just happen. You know, that's part of the game. And you know, he just, then Sam came in, you know, and for 4 years he just did not have me in the plans. And so I was just fighting my way through, and then finally, you know, Kenny Arena and Bruce, you know, reached out, and there was an opening, and you know, I'm just happy that we got the deal done, and you know, hopefully things just keep moving forward from now.
Was there a moment where it hit you that this isn't going to work out, or start looking for something else, or did it kind of just come across you?
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer in just I mean, the way these things turned out and the way it happened, even though it took a little longer to get done, it just, the timing, it was just the way it was supposed to happen, to be honest. Like any player, you get a little, like, nervous and, you know, and worried, I guess, to a certain extent, on what's going to happen on your future. But, you know, the way it worked out, I wouldn't change it.
Now, Sebastian, you mentioned kind of that change in leadership and where that lands you. There's a lot of kids that are going to Europe these days from the U.S., a lot of guys that are going at a young age, fighting their way through that academy structure, and then trying to break into the first team. And that's obviously the toughest part. What kind of advice would you have for somebody in that same situation? What did you go through mentally? Because I have to imagine that's extremely difficult. You feel yourself on the precipice of making this jump, and then just because one position changes, all of a sudden you're at square one or maybe even below.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good question, you know, because it's very difficult. I think people underestimate how difficult it actually is, because, you know, if you don't really have anybody holding your hand, you got to really, I mean, you're playing with men, you know, and it's you're playing with, you know, well, in my case, is Premier League players, you know, and even though it's a very good standard, it's hard, it's tough, you know, it's tough to break in, you know, and you've got players that have already been there, or like that are English or are coming in from other places in Europe, and these clubs have money, you know, so they can just buy new players, and it's not like the MLS, you know, it's just a whole different system. So it just makes it that much harder. But I, you know, the way I did it, you just got to stick with it, you know? I mean, I think you just got to remember how much you've invested in this already. So you just got to keep reminding yourself of that, and just stick with it. And you never know when your break can come, you know? Just like, I mean, just like yesterday or the other day, you know, when I come on, I didn't think at first I was ready to start, but you know, I come on and I, you know, things happen, you know, you don't plan it, and you just got to stick with it. And that's how it happens.
Do you have any regrets at all, Sebastian, or is this something where, you know, you kind of said it, you have to push through it, and you look at it and you're 22 years old. You're at the very beginning of your career. You've been through this kind of trial by fire, and now you find yourself in a better opportunity. Is that the way you see it, or is there any
that's
sort of thing saying, hey, there's a regret here, maybe I should have gone a different route or a different place or done something else?
I mean, I'd be lying if I said, you know, I didn't think of that, you know, but to be honest, everything was supposed to happen the way it did, you know. I think it's easy to say, oh, I shouldn't have done this, but at the time it was the best opportunity I could think of, you know, and you'd be foolish to not take it. And I learned a lot.
Is there any specific moment that you can remember that maybe has kind of stuck with you as a teaching moment where you said, okay, next time I do this differently, or something of that sort?
I think, I've learned a lot throughout the years, you know. I think for 22 from, I don't even feel 22, you know, as far as what I've been around, especially in Europe, you know, I had to grow up early. I guess there's a lot of moments. It's very hard to pick one. I think there's been a lot of special times, and I think a lot of struggle, but I think there's a lot of good things lying ahead, and I think that's what I'm looking forward to.
There you have it. You're back in L.A., or not back in L.A., you're a Bay Area guy. That's a little bit of a different change for you. What have you seen in L.A.? I mean, you come from a Premier League environment, and you come into MLS, one of the top teams in MLS, of course. They've won a lot of championships recently. Can you compare and contrast a little bit? What's the same? What's maybe a little different?
It's a beautiful place. You know, I'm from California, obviously. I'm from up north. But it's, you know, you try to be careful. You know, I mean, I guess I guess I'm very hard work. I'm a very hard working. I'm very dedicated. You know, I'm not, you know, it's very easy to, I guess, get used to the life here and just the lifestyle, but it's, I'm just trying to get to the next level and better myself. So I think I'm just focused on that at the moment. My career is everything that I have my mind on. So, I mean, you know, definitely when I leave the training ground, it's nice and have the family close, but it's, my mind's on the game for sure.
But you mentioned it. You are a Bay Area guy. Were you a Quakes fan growing up? Was are you playing
you know
for the other team right now?
I was a big fan of both. I mean, it's tough to say. It's tough to say. I was definitely a San Jose fan, you know, growing up. But I wasn't a diehard. But I mean, LA was always in the spotlight, you know. So it was always like the dream, you know. Especially if you're playing the MLS, this is where you want to be. And, you know, so I'm glad I'm here now.
There you go. That was a diplomatic answer. Both the Bay Area and LA are going to like that. Definitely your NBA ties, though, are pretty clear here. You're no Lakers fan.
Oh yeah, that's without a doubt.
Yeah,
I'm super happy over that. You know, definitely happy.
Now they're
going well so far. 3-2 in games. So.
Yeah, 3-2. LeBron doesn't have his supporting cast, so there's that to it. I sit next to a Warriors fan, Nick Rosano, here
Sounds
in this
like
office.
You're a Cavs fan.
And I'm not. It's just I think the Bay Area with the Giants. I mean, it's just you're getting spoiled right now. But
we're a title town for sure. I mean, hopefully we get this one.
Rub it in. But there's got to be Lakers fans on the team, right? I mean, are you talking trash to the other guys? You're like, hey, where's your club?
We've got Kenny Walker over here. He's actually from Cleveland, so I'm always going to say, you know, throwing three up and everything. You know, it's funny. All the East Coast guys always keep going for Cleveland, but I'm definitely enjoying it.
So does that mean you're hosting a Game 6, Game 7 viewing party for the team?
Yeah, I'm moving into my new place, so I'll probably throw one. I'll definitely throw one if we win it.
All right, there you go. Where's the new spot at, Sebastian? How you doing this new life? You leave rainy London, you come to the sunshine. How do you enjoy it?
Oh man, it's a life changer. It's it really is nice. It's very therapeutic for sure. By the beach, you know, I mean you have to do that. At least for my first year here, I think I'm gonna do that route.
There you go. By the beach, Sebastian Leggett. There you go. I think I'm getting it now. Big game this Wednesday for the Galaxy in the Open Cup. They're going to host PSA Elite. You can watch it on YouTube at 10:30 Eastern. Maybe Sebastian Leggett will be in that game. His first goal, a big performance for him. Maybe the Warriors will win it too, man. Good luck to you. I won't hate against it just because the Giants
Dub
got theirs.
Dub Nation.
All right.
Awesome.
Thank you, Sebastian.
Thank you for your time.
Big thanks to Sebastian Leggett there. Always appreciate him coming on. Did I say it right that time?
I don't think so. I think you're still trying to say with a G, and I think it's a J. I think it's legit. Like, not – I think that's how you pronounce
legit,
it.
Legit, like an aeroplane.
And it sounded like – because there's another T in front of the J.
Yeah, that's a crazy
G.
place
I think
to.
He was trying to put it in, so it was like let jet. But I don't know.
Well, and he also confused me because he had his parents' pronunciation. Then he went with his, and then he – but other people say it this way. It doesn't seem to be – super definitive. Let me know. Maybe you have it. Let us know what you think of any of the games this weekend. When we come back, Jeff Crandall, U.S. Open Cup, and we'll talk a little bit of Women's World Cup, too.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hi, this is Owen Coyle of the Houston Dynamo, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
It's your thing. Do what you want to do. I can't tell you who to talk to.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys. David Goss, I am Andrew Weeby. With us now, Nick Rosano, another editor here at MLSsoccer.com, and our maven on all things U.S. Open Cup. It's a big week, Nick.
Was that song purposely because he says sock it to you and it sounds like soccer? Or was
no, I just feel like it's our thing, U.S. Okay. Open Cup, you know? I guess, I'm sorry, Canadians, you have the championship. We talk about that as well. This week, though, it's Open Cup, and there's 16 games, Nick, is that right?
Yeah, 16
games. Or at least 16 with MLS teams.
No, that's all, yeah, it's all 16.
Okay, that's
each
all
game
we got.
Has,
that's
each
all,
game
okay.
has an MLS team in it.
Okay, the big ones, if you're not paying attention out there, I think the biggest has to be Tuesday night's Cascadia clash. That's the Seattle Sounders big boys against the Portland Timbers big boys. Sounders, too, are going to take on Real Salt Lake. Then you have Colorado, Colorado Springs. We kind of referenced that one. San Jose, Sacramento has got some juiciness to it. FC Dallas, Oklahoma Energy, those are there's a little turnpike challenge there. Sporting KC, St. Louis. I mean, this doesn't stop. You keep going down the line. Cosmos, NYCFC, Charleston, Orlando, blah, 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 blah. We'll be on Jeff Crandall here in a second. He'll tell us all about these as well. But let's go around. What's the one you're looking forward to most? What's the thing that's juiciest here?
Well, besides the one you mentioned, I'm actually looking ahead to the first game of the night, which is Philadelphia and the Rochester Rhinos. Those are two teams that really get into the Open Cup. Philly made that run last year. Mm-hmm. Rochester's the only non-MLS team to have won it since 1996. And they're also undefeated in USL play this year, playing some really good defense. And I think they're really both going to go at it on Tuesday night.
I think I'm going to go San Jose Sacramento just because I think Sacramento it's one of those USL teams that doesn't want to consider itself as such. And this is an opportunity for them to prove it. And they in San Jose, man, they're fighting over territory up there. You've got a lot of the youth talent getting divided between the two. I think that one, especially with Preki, I'm sure going to put a little bit of emphasis on that. What he got mad when they won like 7-2 in this competition to get here. Yeah. So he's not going to expect anything but a great performance. And Dave, I mean, you got to be going Cosmos.
No, I don't have to. I was going
to
say.
Yeah, you have to.
I'm going to say that because I don't want people to think we didn't notice it. But I am actually excited for Orlando Charleston because Blackbaud Stadium's a great place.
It is.
Orlando going back to play a USL team after being in the league. They were rivals in the Eastern Conference. Charleston's playing very well in USL play as well. And they're one of the teams that has more veteran core because they're consistently able to keep guys together. And so I'm actually excited to watch that game in terms of like the quality of the game.
Right.
I understand the excitement behind New York Cosmos, New York City. I mean, they're playing on the same field that I played on in high school. So that's like legendary for a guy like Villa to have that opportunity.
Raul,
it's exciting.
You think people will tell them before they get there?
I think it says it on the field. I don't think you have to be told.
I mean, it depends on if they look at the plaque, right?
Yeah. But okay. It's a bilingual plaque, so it's out there
for
everyone.
They should be good. They should be good. Hey, let's bring on Jeff Crandall now. He's heading up all that coverage for U.S. Soccer. Unprecedented coverage, really. I think all these games on YouTube for your enjoyment. Jeff, what's up, man? How's it going?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you here. If people don't know, you can follow all the coverage on Twitter, @OpenCup. You're the man behind that, Jeff. You're also the man who's helping us out or at least going to tell us a little bit about how we can consume these things. I mentioned YouTube before you came on, but maybe you can give people the nitty-gritty.
Yeah, so actually through the first three rounds of the tournament, we've had really good coverage, teams streaming over a majority of games every round, and it's no different. Tuesday and Wednesday this week, we'll have 14 of 16 games streaming. There's a possibility of a 15th game, but all of that information is on ussoccer.com and on our fourth round U.S. Open Cup hub page. Everything will be on the U.S. Soccer YouTube. And I believe even the New York Cosmos NYCFC match will be broadcast live on One World Sports.
Now, we talked a little bit about what matches really got our blood going, but you didn't get to hear that, and that's good because I want to know what your number one is, this untainted opinion of Jeff Crandall here.
Man, I've got like five. The most obvious one is the Seattle-Portland game, the only all-MLS matchup of this round. Mainly because there's 17 teams that entered in this round and only 15 winners from the last round. So you had to pair two MLS teams together. And there's a little controversy around that, why that could happen. The easy way to explain it is prior to the round, both the Timbers and Sounders had their USL teams still in it, and they could not be paired together when going through the draw because they can't play their USL team. So
little brother, I think, is what you're looking for there.
Little brother, there we go. So they actually had to be, when you look at the tournament bylaws and everything, part of what governs the tournament and pairings is trying to find ways or matchups that make geographic sense with those two not being able to play against each other because the two teams played against each other in the last round. Neither could be paired against that matchup, and so it made the most sense to pair Seattle and Portland, though. A lot of people might want to see that game later on in the tournament, no doubt. Those two teams do not like each other, and but it should be a good early test, and, you know, Whoever wins that, you may have to make an early favorite for U.S. Open Cup champion in 2015.
And we always hear how tough it can be for teams maybe to try and value the tournament and get a good roster out there, but a lot of MLS teams off this weekend, and we've heard a lot of talk from Jason Christ, from Jim Curtin, about how seriously they want to take this tournament. Do you see maybe a shift in that from past years to this year?
Oh, it's definitely, I definitely see it changing. You know, the people I'm talking to, I talked to Jim Curtin too, and he was very adamant about wanting to put a strong team out there. I think it helps coming off the international break. For some teams it helps not playing. Some teams had to play this past weekend and had players missing and are just coming back. You know, Chicago Fire right now, Frank Yalop said today, will be missing David Akam and Jovan Jones on Tuesday. So, I still think even in the Fire's case, they're trying to take it seriously like they have the last few years. And what is that down to? I think people are seeing that this is a way to win a trophy. But beyond that, the prize money is big, and obviously there's that carrot of the CONCACAF Champions League spot. And we see teams like Montreal, RSL went to the finals in the past, and teams are seeing the value there. So it's to me, it's the easiest way to qualify for the Champions League, and it's good to see these MLS teams taking it more seriously. I still think it's probably about half that will take it seriously, for the fourth round. But, you know, fifth round, quarterfinals, that's when you really start to see the top squads coming out from MLS.
And obviously MLS teams, you know, taking it more seriously, putting out stronger rosters. But every round, every year, it seems like there's always a few upsets, and I'm just wondering if you see any potential MLS casualties out there this round.
I'm sure there will be. I actually the last round you guys probably saw, NASL, the second division, did very poorly against USL. Only two teams advanced, I think, out of the nine. The Cosmos and Atlanta Silverbacks are the only two left from Division Two. So I'm sure out of 16 games, there will be one or two upsets. The one, you know, as much as it hurts me because I love Jim Curtin, the one that's interesting to me is Philadelphia against Rochester. Rochester is undefeated in USL this year, and obviously have won two Open Cup games. They're top of the league in USL as well. This game's sort of prime for me as one that could happen, though. Rochester just had to play on Saturday, and Philadelphia sat idle. With Philly taking it seriously, getting some guys back, it may not be an upset, but I think it's a game to watch. I'm trying to think what else it could be.
Come on, LA Galaxy, Jeff. LA Galaxy, yeah, PSA Elite, baby, they're
Galaxy,
coming.
LA Galaxy have a recent history, at least, of falling pretty early in this tournament. Now they've had to travel cross country a few times when doing that, but LA really, for all intents and purposes, no matter who they put out there, they're playing the only amateur team left in the tournament in PSA Elite, and they're at home. So Bruce Arena probably doesn't have to put out his top team. Maybe he should, given some of the past results recently, but I think the LA Galaxy should be safe in this one.
Now, Seattle Sounders head coach Siggy Schmidt had some critiques for the tournament as we came into this run-up, and one of them he was saying is that he'd like to see the tournament less regionalized. I actually think that I fall on the other side of that. I know that you want some of these matchups later on in the tournament, you know, Portland, Seattle being an obvious one, and a lot of these other ones are regionalized, but my argument would be that there's no guarantee that you actually get those late into the tournament. So let's have our Austin Houstons, our
St. Louis KCs.
Yeah, our Sacramento San Jose's now, when we know that we're going to get a Colorado Springs. Where do you net out on that?
I was asked this a few weeks ago when the draw came out, and I think it was – I also remember Siggy being really upset a few years ago when Seattle had to travel to Tampa Bay because of the way the draw fell, and they didn't necessarily have a – close geographic rival at that point. So I tend to agree with your view. And my main thing is, look, it's one thing for MLS teams. They have bigger budgets. They can more easily travel and do these things. If you look at the amateur teams, you know, a team like Chula Vista FC that had a great run and went out to Sacramento Republic in the last round, they had to do like a Kickstarter or a GoFundMe campaign just to pay for their travel up to Sacramento because they'd had to travel three straight weeks. And, you know, Chula Vista to Sacramento, it's the same state. We all know how long of a state California is, but they had to travel to Arizona twice and then up there. That's a lot of money, a lot of burden for an amateur team. U.S. Soccer helps out on the travel some, but when you pile up that travel cost, it just becomes too much. And I think the way I view the tournament is it's growing. You know, more big teams are taking it seriously. There's a little bit more money going into it, but I don't know that we're at a point in this country with this tournament that we can just have a straight blind, not to say blind draw, but straight non-geographic draw right now. I just don't know that it makes logistical sense at this point.
There you have it. Fourth round coming up this week, Tuesday and Wednesday. A lot of really juicy matchups to be had here. I know a lot of people, myself included, are going to be camped out in front of YouTube. I expect I'll be jumping around. Maybe I can get some quads, you know, $5, $6, $7 going if I get really, really ambitious on this one. Jeff Crandall, though, helping run all that coverage, helping keep us abreast of the results in the tournament at Open Cup. That's the Twitter to follow. All that information coming out right there. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Thanks, guys.
Good stuff there from Jeff Crandall. Always glad to talk to him. Let's move on to the international scene, though. We kind of referenced that a little bit with some of these absences for different folks. Let's start with the tournament that is now over for a U.S. team. That would be the U-20 World Cup. They took on Serbia on Saturday night, Sunday morning, depending on which time zone you were in. No goals through regulation, no goals through extra time, and then the back of the net started bulging in that PK shootout. In the end, it was Serbia, a heartbreaker for the Americans. 6-5 on PKs. I kind of mentioned it earlier, Zach Steffen with some huge stops in this one. But I think the story for a lot of people are, look, PKs are a crapshoot, but there were some bad U.S. PKs in this one.
One of the wrinkles in this was the U.S. had two guys suspended because of cards and two players are out because of injury, and so they only used one substitute. A lot of times you see substitutes make penalties because you play 120 minutes and then you're tired when you come into that. They didn't have that option.
Yeah, you're asking somebody for that technical moment that,
at the same time, the one substitute they used did miss. So I don't know if that really is an argument. It is tough, and it's kind of one of those things where at some point in a FIFA tournament, a U.S. team is going to have to not play well and get through. A few times we've had where we've played well and lost. We don't really have a lot of those moments where they don't play well and they still get through.
Yeah, the missers in this one, I guess that's not the right word. Harsh. Yeah, Rubio Rubin had his attempt saved to start it off. DeSavio Payne scores, Areola scores, Emerson Heinemann scores, Gideon Zalalem scored. He had a nice PK in this one. Joel Senora, he got abjectively screwed. I mean, this was a great PK that just was inches away. I guess it doesn't matter, though. Yeah. He hits the V, and it comes right back out at him. Marky Delgado got his to go. Cameron Carter-Vickers, he hit a steward on, like, the upper deck. He didn't even come close on this one. And Riquejo gets his saved late on. But like I said, a good performance from Zach Steffen. Your thoughts, Rosie?
Yeah, I thought it was a great performance from Zach Steffen. Throughout the tournament, both in this game and throughout the tournament, impressed with the United States center-back pairing. I thought, you know, sometimes we forget Cameron Carter-Vickers is only like 17 years old.
Yeah, which is crazy, right? He doesn't look it, does he? No.
No, he certainly looks like he's
he looks older than I am.
Team. Yeah.
I look like a baby.
And him and Zalalem could be eligible for the next. That's how young they are, that they could come to another U-20 World Cup. Now, hopefully they're playing at a higher level at that point. They don't have to, but there's definitely a lot of players from this team that you feel like could make an impact on the full team.
There's been some people after this that a little bit worried about this, or maybe like, you know, not sky is falling, but like, oh man, we should have done better. But ultimately, this was a quarterfinal for them. Do you feel good about the showing despite kind of an up and down tournament?
I think it's great. I think the last time I really, you know, felt this way about the U.S. youth team was the last time they made the quarterfinals in 2007. And now that team, I think, had a little more, I guess, attacking bite to it. I think they put like 6 goals past Poland or something back in the day. But hey, you know, you play to your strengths. You have a great goalkeeper. You have great great defensive pairing. I mean, you saw flashes of good stuff from some of the attackers from Emerson Heinemann and Gideon Zalalem. And I think there's, you know, both as a team and I think as individuals, there's reason to be optimistic.
I would agree with him. I'd say, though, I think I expected more offensively from this team. I think they went down to qualifying with an idea of they were going to play on the ground and be creative and take guys one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And they struggled with it on that field and they had to adjust, which is fine, and never went back to it. And I think coming into this tournament, once again, you didn't bring Roman Gall. Tommy Thompson didn't get that much playing time. Areola played well. Sonora didn't give you enough. Maki Tal gets hurt. And there wasn't really an offensive flow outside of that New Zealand game that I thought we were going to see from this team.
It it looked like they were into it for like the first 15 minutes there against Serbia, and then it started raining, and it all went out the window.
There you go. Well, they are out, but a good showing for the U-20s. Regardless, the U.S. women are still in it, of course, at their World Cup. I mentioned a 0-0 draw against Sweden. Quickly, thoughts on the performance, Rosie, and then we'll talk about Abby Wambach's comments, because those are really what is getting the majority of the press coverage right now.
I think overall it was a pretty poor game. I don't think that I saw a lot of doom and gloom around the U.S. team after that game. Like, they were lucky not to lose because Megan Klingberg clears that shot off the crossbar and out.
Christine Lilly-esque of her.
Yes, very much. But on the other hand, I thought the U.S. had some decent looks. I mean, we'll talk about Abby Wambach in a second. She had a pretty good look once she came on. A couple close calls for them there. It was. Get the ball out wide, swing it in. It just doesn't seem like there is a whole lot of stuff happening there in central midfield, and it was pretty tough to watch.
That's been the complaint so far. We, of course, talked to Emma Hayes about that. We will talk to her again on Thursday to recap their final game of the group. And
as well as Canada's. There's not much for us to mention again.
It's tough for us with them. The timing just hasn't been going right on their side. But they're sticking in it. They still have a chance to move on to the next round. It's not – best of day, though.
It's not
though,
pretty
right?
Offensively for them. They had a weather delay.
Sense of theme, huh?
Yeah, they had a weather delay as well. And it's true, though, because people talk about it, and they say that the women's game around the world is growing in terms of the style, in terms of the fundamentals, and that the U.S., and I think Canada slightly in that conversation as well, aren't keeping up. And so they have the athletes and they have the stars, but do they have the style and do they have the technique to play with the world's teams? And so both those teams now struggling kind of makes you feel that way.
Yep. Abby Wambach had this to say the other day, asked about the two goals she missed against Australia. She had a great chance against Sweden as well, headed one right into the ground. It was a great save by the goalkeeper to keep it out of the top corner. But these were about those Australia misses, the ones that we talked about and said, how in God's name did she miss that? She said, the two headers that I had that I missed in the first game, I think I score if we're on grass. Thoughts on that? Because that strikes me as it strikes me as an excuse.
I don't see the correlation. I don't understand what the comment is based on. That if she was on grass, it comes off her head differently?
Her explanation was that she would not think at all about selling out or throwing her body or putting herself on the line if it was on grass versus turf. Yeah, I don't get it either.
Like a second of hesitation.
Yeah. And I can understand that there might be, but I would also argue that this is a World Cup, and if you're thinking that in the moment about grass versus turf, that might be your own issue, because I read actually some comments from one of the Netherlands star who said, turf, this is not a big deal. We all play on turf all the time. And I believe that I think it's 60% of NWSL games are played on turf. So it's not a new thing. This is not something different.
You're also not the only one on turf.
Right.
If other people are scoring goals, you should be scoring goals unless you're not as good a team as them.
It's an even playing field, and I mean in that regard. And Abby Wambach didn't play in the NWSL this season. She was true.
Yeah. So she
maybe it's rustiness.
And that's
of turf.
One of the things people have been saying is in that first game, the commentators were saying that it felt like she was a half second late, or maybe she didn't have that sharpness so that she could finish. They're going to need her to be huge, because I said last show, we talked about it, that I didn't think she should be starting. But when they didn't start her, they still continued to play direct, and they can still continue to play in the air. So if they can't not play that way, then they need her to be big, because they can't try and play aerially to press in LaRue. So if that's the only way the rest of the team can play, then they have no choice but to have Wambach there as an option.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what Jill Ellis does in this final game as far as lineups and the like. Of course, the U.S. playing for some seeding, trying to get a good draw going into the knockout rounds. Canada trying to make
their –
They
also still have to get into the knockout
rounds. Yeah,
that's
true. They still have to. There's a very, very good chance you expect that they will. Stay tuned on that one, their next game on Tuesday. Canada also playing this week on Tuesday. Dominica, the second in a pair of World Cup qualifiers. They won the first 2-0. Kyle Larin and Russell Tybert with the goals. Tybert? Yeah, I think it's Tybert. Tybert. What am I going to do? But 2-0 there. You expect them to win in the second one. This is a good step forward for them, and it's nice to see young Canadian players score in that sense, especially a guy like Larin. They've been searching for a center forward for so long.
And these are guys that have the opportunity where if they play with this national team, they can get a level of confidence that maybe other MLS players can struggle to get because they don't get consistent minutes as much. Laren's proven he can play at Orlando. Tesho's proven he can play at FC Dallas. Add to that Gold Cup minutes, add to that World Cup qualifying minutes, and it may be help them in their development. And I think Canada has something to be excited about. But I'm not Canadian. I haven't been burned before. So I can get there, yeah. I think, a little bit quicker than they are willing to get there.
Yeah, I was always curious what Daniel Suizotto might have thought. Can they make it to a hex? Do they have the talent? What about the Gold Cup this summer, Rosie? What do you think?
Sure, I think they can make it to a hex. I mean, what do you got? You got to go into the groups of four next time. So yeah, I mean, you're not playing like, you know, you do have to play a Honduras or a Mexico, right, or whoever. But I think this team is much better. I think they have the talent in Canada has been developing much better. I mean, you talked about Kyle Aaron, talked about Tesho. I think it's a better team than the one that got blown out, 8-1. sorry, Canadian fans.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think they. I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't know if they necessarily get to like the Gold Cup final. I don't know if they make Copa America Centenario. But I mean, I definitely see them being competitive in a knockout game.
Yeah, are they favorites? No, and I think Canadians would admit that, but I think they're on their way up. Tuesday, 7:30 p.m., that one, Canada and Dominica. You probably have to follow it on Twitter, what we couldn't find a live stream last time.
No, there was.
There was?
There was a one-camera stream of the last game. I didn't watch it live, but I saw it on YouTube after, which was a little bit hard to watch.
Okay.
But I do believe that this game now will be.
All right. Hey, we'll look for it. We'll tweet it out if we can find it. In the meantime, on to the mailbag.
Kurt Larson will be coming as well. If you want to follow, because it's at BMO. So yeah, if you want to follow.
Daniel Squizzato, obviously, he's our boy too. Both of those great follows up in Canada. Mailbag time. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
This is Ollie Curtis, the sporting director for the New York Red Bulls, and I'm on Extra Time Radio.
Intrigue. Back now on Extra Time Radio with David Goss. I am Andrew Wiebe. We
are
in the mailbag.
You think people would even complain if we just didn't come back and we just played an episode of House of Cards?
Or we just played that on loop?
We'll just put the episode on and just we'll walk.
True. Yeah,
we'll
a little YouTube session. Not YouTube, a Netflix session at the end of ETR. None of that for you, though. We are into the mailbag. Take us away, Dave. What do we got?
But this is why we played that. Andrew Martinez Alegria emailed us and says, guys, I don't know why I can't shake the sense that Sepp Blatter's resignation is all part of some Frank Underwood-esque plot. Michel Platini, his protege, said before FIFA elections after the FIFA arrest that he urged Blatter to resign. Blatter got reelected, then resigned 5 days later. Platini is now seen as the odds-on favorite to win the presidency at the next election. What if Platini urged Blatter to resign after the election? In other words, a scenario like this. Hey, Sepp, you need to resign. This situation's getting out of control and it's going to engulf you, but run for the presidency because you'll get elected anyways. I'll make moves that will publicly appear to be against you so that I can use that as a springboard to the presidency when you resign. When I get elected, I'll get you an honorary position with Benny's. Thoughts?
Who's the Doug Stamper of this whole situation? Who's the guy behind the scenes running game? I mean,
it would
if we're going
like to be Jerome Valky.
Yeah, there'd be some. Yeah. There's some Valky to that.
He's the one who got caught.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think that he's maybe his crony or whatever you call it for Blatter. There's definitely some House of Cards esque politics in FIFA. That's
I really am at the point
obvious.
Where I believe just about anything. What I find even more entertaining than that email is the back and forth between John Oliver and
Jack Warner.
And Jack Warner back at it again. Jack Warner actually responded to the mittens taking off video on the same channel, went after him a little bit, and then John Oliver comes. He does Jack Warner not understand that he's just playing into his hands this whole time? Like,
I don't
by
think
throwing
Jack Warner
the onion
gets
up,
he's a comedian.
But, I mean, it's like it's perfect.
Yeah, I don't think he gets.
He does.
He
called him a comedian fool.
But I don't know if he like understands that like there's no value in it that like.
That you're not shaming him?
No. By shaming him, you're making him more popular.
John Oliver was like, yes, you've seen my business card. I am a comedian fool, and I will now proceed to shame you once again.
Yeah.
You've played into my hands. Entertaining stuff. This FIFA stuff never seems like it's going to end. There was some rumor this weekend that Sepp Blatter might run for the president again. Now people are saying, well, that was just a rumor. We'll just have to wait and see. What's up next?
We have an email here from David H., and he says he's been noticing an excessive amount of talking back to the refs. when a call is made against that team, particularly disturbed last week in the Orlando-Chicago match. When are the refs going to start booking for this? In parentheses, captains are the only players on the field that should be chatting with the refs. Am I wrong? As a player of the game, I know you feel hard done by the refs sometime, but they're doing their job. He said this was for Simon, but this week you are the Simon Board of Instant Replay. I know Instant Replay shines lights on missed calls or confirmation or disagreements with refs' decision. That is the luxury of replay. How do you feel about it on the field? Is this not dissent?
Yeah, I think it is dissent. I think it's up to every referee. There are rules in MLS now, and they have been since the beginning of last season, where it should only be the captain, and you'll get fined, and then progressively the punishments will get worse if you have this mass grouping of players around the referee. That's not supposed to be allowed. We did see some of that this weekend. We definitely saw it a little bit on that first PK call in that DC game. I'm with him. The captain gets to do it. The rest of you stay away. You get your little word. You get your couple words in. That happens in soccer. That happens in every sport. People are always going to make it felt.
Do you think it's a major issue in MLS, or is it a soccer thing?
I think it's
worse?
No, I don't think. I think it's the same all over the world. You see any sort of call being made. Watch any Barca Real Madrid match, and this is just – I mean, you can go crazy with this stuff.
I think in general,
you have to draw the line somewhere, and that takes actual real punishment on field. Even if you just find them off the field, I don't think that stops nearly as much. But we'll see how that one goes. It's a tough one from game to game.
We got this one last week. I didn't have an opportunity to read it, but Alan Gordon from San Jose, which I love that we have a fan that's Alan Gordon in San Jose, just told us he was at a bar anxiously waiting for the U.S. Women's Opener, putting his FIFA Women's World Cup Panini stickers album together.
Oh.
What fun. He wanted to thank Simon, and I guess you as well, for introducing him.
It really is Simon.
And he'll be doing the same for Copa America.
Well done.
So Panini stickers
It's
are
been
back.
A while since we've talked about Paninis, but apparently we sparked a little bit of an addiction there. What are you going to do? Big thanks to our guest, Sebastian Legit. I think I said it right that time. And Jeff Crandall, U.S. Open Cup. Watch all of that. Let us know what you think of today's show. Simon Borg no longer here. Well, he'll be back next week, but not on Thursday. We'll bring in some more guests for you to have fun with. Until then, we'll see you around next time.